Greetings and salutations, everyone. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy. I'm the control operator for this Limark Technical Net. Every Sunday night at around 8 o'clock, we get together and we teach each other and we learn from each other and hopefully we entertain each other. And once again, I thank you all for joining me this Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we'll try and do this all over again. Let me drop for a second and I will give you the usual links. Okay, if you want to reach me via email, that would be for what we used to call mailbag questions. Those are questions that normally are asked on the technical net, but if you're not in radio distance and you can't go onto the net, you can email them to me. If they sound interesting, we can discuss it, and you can listen to it either on the internet stream that we provide, or we have an archive of the files of the technical net that you can listen to at a later time. So, or if you have what we used to call TechNet puzzles, and we're always looking for TechNet puzzles. They're kind of as rare as hen's teeth, and they're usually a nice question that kind of opens the conversation for a bunch of different things. Or if something is happening technically in the news that you have technical expertise in and you would like to share your technical expertise, you could notify me and we'll set aside a little time and you can do a short presentation on the topic. Or if you have a question for Paul, space or NASA related, and you would like me to tap him on the shoulder and let him know, you could send him email as well. His email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. But my email address that you could reach me is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Also, I provide a link page every week. I cut and paste interesting articles and or YouTubes that I see throughout the week, and I publish them, and they stay up for the foreseeable future. You can get to it by typing into your browser, roy.ac2gs.com. We have a chat room available. Sometimes it's quiet, sometimes it's noisy. You can get to that by typing into your browser chat.ac2gs.com. As I mentioned earlier, we have an internet audio stream of the technical net. You can reach it by typing into your browser technet.ac2gs.com. I initially just kept it live during the technical net, but a few people asked me to keep it live the rest of the week. So 24/7, if you want to hear over the internet what's going on in Glen Oaks, just type in technet.ac2gs.com. And, of course, I'd like to remind people that Mike, KC2NJI, has a great archive site. It's called amateurradio.tv. It has over a million visitors. And it has archives of the Limark Technical Net going all the way back to September of 2006. So avail yourself of the wisdom of many hams who have either unfortunately moved away from the neighborhood or moved very far away and become silent keys, unfortunately. So their wisdom persists in the audio files over at amateurradio.tv. Let me drop for a second, and I'll tell you what we got planned for tonight. Okay, there's a couple of subjects I want to bring up at the very top of the TechNet. Shouldn't take more than about 5 minutes. And we will go to the usual questions, comments, topics for discussion. I'll ask people to check in and give us their first name and their call sign, what's the nature. We'd like to get amateur radio-related questions out front. There'll be more than enough time for any science or technology-related questions or conversations. And we'll see how that works out, and hopefully that should take us to approximately 10:15 tonight. Paul will join us for the SpaceNet report, which should take us to approximately 11 p.m., and I will return at that point to tie a bow on everything and wish you well for the coming week. So, you know, if the laws of physics don't break down, and the repeater is working right, and my shack is working right, and my computer is working right, and no one strange in Ontario is sending us weather reports, that's the plan for tonight. Let me drop, and I'll give you the first few comments that I have for you at the top of this technical net tonight. Beep. Okay, as I alluded to earlier, last Sunday we had a weird experience where we were getting Canadian weather report at regular intervals while we were trying to have a technical net. As we suspected, this was due to a repeater in Ontario that is programmed to link with us around 8:30, and you know, sometimes it unlinks at 10:30, sometimes 11. And so Lou, good old NY2H, emailed that repeater and said, could you stop doing that? And he sent me a copy that basically says they're terribly sorry. They did not mean to do that. They were broadcasting weather reports locally because of weather conditions in Ontario, and they didn't mean to be a problem with our net or our repeater, and they said that as soon as they got the message, they rushed over and broke the link for that. So we shouldn't be hearing any more French weather reports through the night. Let me drop for a sec. The second little subject I just want to mention, because this seems to be a kind of a little portion that I tell people what's going on as far as I know of artificial intelligence. Last week I mentioned that Google had kind of jumped ahead of most of the other people with the latest iteration of their agent Gemini. Well, OpenAI didn't want Google to be, have the front position, so this week they announced the new iteration of GPT. Previous, latest and greatest was something they designated 01. They now bring us 03, which is much more powerful and has recursive routines where they don't just kind of synthesize an answer, but they take the synthesized answer and they reprocess it and recursively reanalyze it. And supposedly it's much, much smarter. There are some Turing-like tests to see if artificial intelligence is real or just a game. A lot of you probably heard about, full artificial intelligence as opposed to this generative version, which isn't quite what everyone's hoping for. Although O3 is not fully cognizant and complete artificial intelligence that they're looking for, they think that they're close on the trail of something like that. Other people don't think that's the case. We'll see what happens. The fly of the ointment for O3 is the full-blown O3 implementation. Every question asked costs approximately $1,000 in computational expenses. And I don't know about you, but I'm not going to spend $1,000 to play games with an artificial intelligence. So the story is that they're going to be working on a optimized, compressed, smaller, slightly stupider version called O3 Mini that will be available in a month or two, and it'll be fun to see what that looks and sounds like. So that's the story as far as artificial intelligence. OpenAI is back in the number one position with O3, and if anyone out there wants to spend $1,000 to play with it, please tell me if it was worth $1,000. Anyway, that's my little bits of opening for today. It's time for the usual questions, comments, topics of discussion, if anyone has any of them. And like I said before, try to kind of put the amateur radio portion first as opposed to last. So if there's anyone out there with any questions or comments, please hit that push to talk and give me your first name, your call sign, and what's the nature, whether it's a comment or a topic, whether it's amateur radio related or non-amateur related. Okay, guys? Let's go.
Enter XGN, ham radio related, and some not ham radio related.
West recognized. Anyone else care to put their name on the list for tonight? Okay, once again, I want to remind people that, you know, if you come on later on and you say, you know, why aren't we talking about antennas and such, it's because no one's kind of asking anything about antennas. And this is not a show. This is not an entertainment. This is not a broadcast. This is a net between fellow amateur radio operators discussing technology, science, and what have you. So, you know, put up or, you know, don't complain. So, once again, if anyone out there has any other particular topics for discussion or questions or comments about amateur radio especially, hit that push to talk and ID yourself. Okay, perhaps later on some people will think of some questions or some comments for tonight. Wes, what's your subjects for tonight?
Into exam. The first one that I would like to start from, I didn't send you an email. Last week we spoke about the different type of radios, and some of them were actually the radios that mimic something that was present in 1997 to 2007. That was Nextel radio. If you remember, you had a cell phone, a bulky something with a heavy battery on it, and you had a two-way radio on it. And I didn't know at that time that it is a zero application, or something that is similar to zero application, but was proprietary to Nextel. Probably many of ham radio operators heard about it or used it. Let me jump. Okay. So, last week I mentioned that you could install in your phone application zero, ZILLOW, zero application, and this thing, apart from you having a phone, will allow you to have also the walkie-talkie that is license-free. Now, there is a catch in it, because although you have an instant PTT, and you feel like you're using the radio, for 3 users in a group, you need to pay $24. For zero work basic plan, $79. If you want additional 3 users, you pay $45. For 10 users, you pay $80. And so on. There is a core for 12 users, $96, and you have to have a SIM card that is capable to work with your application. Maybe Dr. Roy has some comments. Back to you.
AC2GS, not a lot. I think you're pronouncing it Zillow. It's Zello, Z-E-L-L-O, like hello, but with a Z at the front. And someone convinced me to try it out and didn't mention that it costs money. And I went through the trial period and never used it and got a notice that my trial had expired. And I chose the plan where I don't use it ever again and don't pay them a dime. So I think that's the best plan personally for me. Other people seem to like to use it. You know, I pay for enough things. I don't see the point in the exercise personally for myself. But, you know, there's a lot of applications out there.
And to extend. I think is that Zillow. Okay. Zillow says they have 150 million users in over 200 countries. And there was a video when guy from Philippines, actually he was first in Japan, he made a contact with Philippines and he was so happy about it, but he was a ham radio operator. And he was happy that he doesn't have to have a license. Well, it's their choice. Back to you.
Yeah, it's nothing off my nose. If I don't have to pay the bill for the guy, let him enjoy himself. A long time ago, I told people a story here. There was a gentleman who just felt that he lived in such a compromised environment. He couldn't put an antenna anywhere. I think that was before the days of hotspots and such. And so his the way that he dealt with amateur radio, he bought a service from the internet that gave voice over internet protocol voice transmissions to other hams that were in similar situations. But for some reason, they injected QRM and QRN and static and all kinds of fun stuff to make it seem as though that they were on the radio when, in fact, they were on a high-fidelity internet fiber-based protocol and had junk just kind of spewed around artificially just to give them the illusion. You know, as long as I'm not paying this guy's bills, have fun, enjoy yourself.
I think the major point here is that we are known. That means everybody could be checked, everybody has a call sign, and if you have a group of the people or you apply for the plan and then you're looking for the random connection with other people, you don't know who you're talking to. It's like a bunch of strangers trying to socialize. Back to you.
Yeah, but the internet has thought of that as well. Unfortunately, on the internet, it tends to degenerate, and eventually, your conversations with a camera will end up being not pictures that you really wanted or asked for. So a lot of these random connection internet-based services have kind of gotten degraded. You're right that one of the very nice things about our hobby is we all carry unique identifiers. You know, there's a lot of Johns, a lot of Pauls, a lot of Jims, there's only one AC2GS in the world. The problem that I have is that it's not 100% authenticated. So there's nothing, unfortunately, stopping someone from picking up a ragged logbook of people with FCC licenses and stealing their call sign. And if they're a little smart about it, they'll pick a call sign that's obscure but not too obscure, and you never kind of know. And I've heard more than a few jammers basically doing that, unfortunately. I was always hoping that with the onset of digital modes in amateur radio, there'd be some kind of authentication capability so that, you know, right now, if you wanted to, I wouldn't suggest it because it's not really legal and it's not ethical, you could borrow anyone's DMR ID number. There's no way of proving or disproving it, and go on DMR and make believe you're that guy. So I kind of always was amazed that no one kind of brought. Sorry, Wesley, I think I got thrown off of All Star. Did I miss anything?
I believe the last 5 minutes. Thank you.
Okay, then you didn't hear anything that I said. I'll just repeat myself. That I understand what you're kind of getting at, but I was saying that the internet unfortunately tried anonymous, random connections with people, and it very rapidly degenerates into not pictures that you would like to see of other people and comments of other people. I mean, we get it in the chat room every so often that I have to kick someone who's trying to share dirty pictures. But the thing that I kind of always would have liked when the onset of digital modes for amateur radio came into being was some form of authentication, because although we do have unique identifiers, you know, there's only one AC2GS out there, it doesn't necessarily mean that some jerk could simply say that they're me and say that they're AC2GS. There's no particular way to authenticate it. You know, you can go maybe to QRZ and ask the guy questions maybe, but most people aren't going to be bothered to do things like that. So I'm always kind of wondering in the back of my head that, you know, rather than to come up with a 15th iteration of digital voice modes, they try to do something where you can authenticate your call sign so that you can be the only one to use it. Because things like DMR require a unique ID number, but there's nothing stopping you from taking some other guy's ID number. They're listed. You could look up a call sign, find their ID number, use it in your code patch, and make believe you're that guy. So, there is a difference between non-licensed and licensed people. For the most part, people with licenses respect each other, respect what they had to go through to get licensed, and, you know, don't act quite as immature as people, the average person on the internet, can be.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Rui, for that comment. The first object on the list sent to you a very unique Tar Heel. Very unique Tar Heel design, correct me if I spell it, pronounce it properly. At Convocation 2024, and is titled the Best Mobile Ham Radio Antenna. Now, it is a really unique. I had no idea it exists. I thought that Tar Heel design was no longer when I spoke to them 2 years ago. So, to my surprise, they were at the Hamvention 2024, Hamcation, with the new design, and at this time that was dual Tar Heel for home applications satisfying towns with restricted areas, example mounted in the attic. And I sent you a few pictures. If you wouldn't mind to describe that, if you had the time to look at it, back to you.
Yeah, I'm not particularly that impressed, and it would be interesting to find out if it's the same owners or someone just kind of bought the brand and the spare parts and such and is trying their own attempt. It's basically, it's very reminiscent of the ham sticks. If you've ever seen people do that, they'll take two ham sticks, which are bottom-loaded whip antennas, shortened quarter-wave whip antennas, and they'll screw them together as two dipoles in a single antenna. The only difference is that this one has a variable tuning option at the antenna because it has a screwdriver motor running the inductor and tapping it at different points. As you change the tap point, you change the resonance of that particular screwdriver antenna. So, you know, it's interesting, it's amusing, it's not terribly efficient. Bottom-loaded, shortened whips have high Qs, have low radiation resistance, have very easy inefficiency and loss specifications. So If you got nothing else, well, it's certainly better than nothing else, but, you know, if you have a choice of an actual resonant center-fed dipole versus a two screwdriver antennas hooked up to each other, I would go with the center-fed dipole every day.
I agree with you completely, but I'm going to try to take the other side. There was a video from, few videos actually, from very known to ham radio community bloggers or YouTubers. They were wowing how good this antenna is. One of them presented this antenna on the tripod, and wow. So, yes, actually there are two torsions, motorized torsions, back to back, in horizontal position. Both of them have a motor, and there is a automatic tuner. I'm not sure if it's automatic tuner or it's manual tuner, but it's a tuner. It has the two displays, and as far as the details, little pro dipole for 200 watts PEP is $1,295. The 75 pro dipole, that's the model number, is 400 watts, and it's $1,495. $5. The 100 HP Pro dipole is $1,595, and this is 1,500 watts. And another one is over 1,500 watts. It's called 1,000 HP Pro dipole, and this one is $2,295. Let me drop.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
Oh, okay. No, I just wanted to, all right. I lost Wesley there. I made an adjustment with my antenna. So I just want to see if I'm okay. All right. No, good topic. Anyway, back to you, Roy. I'm making a repeater, okay? QSL.
KF2CC.
Yes.
Oh, hi, Roy. This is Brian, KF2ZZ, checking in.
And, Roy, I just want to my dead phone quieting.
There's a little bit of crackling in the background, but it's fine. Brian, do you want me to put you down for a question later on, or are you just checking in to say hello?
Put me down for a question.
Okay, consider yourself on the list, Brian. Wes, back to you.
Okay, into XM. They also have a very nice new design, which is actually not much of new, but it is not motorized. So, although the antenna covers anything from 80 meters to 10 meters, either whether it is a mobile mounted or it's horizontally mounted, they say that if you change the width for 23 feet, you're going to have amazing results at 160 meters, and your antenna will turn from 30 meters to 160 meters. They also have another one which is on the tripod. So imagine that you are in the field and you have a nice grass there, and then you have a small tripod that comes with the kit, and then each leg of the tripod at the bottom of it has a screw. You can mount the counterpoise that are delivered with the kit to it, and then you can work on it very well. And the guy presented, and he said that The first day he made 400 QSO, and the second day he had 79. Now, this antenna doesn't have a motor, it's much cheaper, and it does have a sleeve. You change the sleeve on the main, part of the antenna, right? You change the position of the sleeve, and then you're tuning it to a particular band. So they give you everything, whip, up-down switch, control cable, 20 feet, snap, infrared, 3/8 to 24 stat, lug washer, and 2 years warranty. The price for it is $549. At least that's what I read from the site. Back to you, Dr. Ray.
Okay, I'm totally unaware of it, and I don't know whether it works or it doesn't work. A lot of antennas, unfortunately, don't work terribly well, but have good reputations. It's very easy to get good reputations, especially if you can delete the bad comments. If you ever go to a YouTube, you'll have lunatics telling you that magnetism doesn't exist, and there'll be a long list of people telling the guy what a genius the man is. So, people kind of saying that, gee, this is great. I don't know these guys. I don't know if they know a great antenna from a terrible antenna. So, I don't have an opinion one way or the other until I know a lot more about an antenna. You know, a couple of months ago, we were talking about antennas that were little more than dummy loads, and the transmission line was operating in common mode and supplying most of the functionality of a very inefficient, overpriced antenna. So, again, there are some lovely antennas out there and some terrible antennas out there, and they all tend to have the same general consensus from different people. So I can't, you know, you got to take reviews, unfortunately, with a grain of salt. You kind of have to interpret what's going on behind the guy writing the story about how he worked all universes with it. You know, I've mentioned before, I'll mention again, a guy who later went into the antenna selling business who took a 5-foot wooden lamppost, planted a 100-watt light bulb, and used the light bulb as the antenna, and got a worked all state certificate out of it. It only goes to show that if you're very highly motivated, you could work with a very compromised antenna system and get results. So, unfortunately, results do not completely correlate with good antenna design.
I have a question to Adrian. If, let's say, you spend $2,300 and you get a horizontal dipole made out of two tar heels for 1.5 kilowatt power legal limit, and then you get Tunematic Duo controller and 50 feet control cable, and practically all you need is just to screw the connector to your rig. Isn't that because you spent your $2,300 for that antenna, you go to EHAM and put 5 stars in your review on it?
Well, what you're talking about is a phenomenon called confirmation bias, in which people have an ego-driven kind of need to agree with their initial assessment of an object. A device needs to be really garbage for a lot of people to just kind of say, well, this is garbage, and just throw it away. A lot of times people will rationalize up and down and around the wazoo. And again, it's called confirmation bias. It's a very common aspect of human psychology.
Well said. Well said. I agree with that. It is not only about the ham radio and antenna, it's about everything. About people being proud from their oldies that he worked on it to make it look like it was almost new, or the new expensive car, especially if it didn't come easy enough. It's a good homework for somebody who wants to spend $695 and get a tripod, bus, basic radial kit, 9-man pack, whip, 50 feet of control cable with ferrite, up-down switch, and 750 watts PEP is the withholding power on that antenna, which is good for field work, but you can also have it in your backyard. Now, there are some people who have not much choice, but they have an attic, and they have something like a balcony, and they want to put a horizontal antenna. They pay the money, but at least they are on the air. Back to you.
Well, like I said before, you know, it's their money. If they want to spend it, God bless them. I wish them all the luck in the world. I wouldn't. For a whole bunch of different reasons. I understand the nature of high Q, low radiation resistance, inefficient, and any kind of resistive loss is going to destroy the output. And also, I like low Q antennas, especially because in the shack I would plug them into my Flex 6700 and have visible the entire ham band. So that's why I kind of ended up with fan dipoles here, that fan dipoles will receive signals from, you know, 10 meters down to 80 meters. And I was able to kind of visualize the whole darn HF field. You can't do that with a very high Q device like these screwdrivers. You have to tune them every time you change the frequency. So it's one frequency at a time and only that. So, again, people want to experiment. I mean, you have to understand, Tar Heels are mobile antennas. They had a great reputation as mobile antennas. Most people would not use them as a base antenna because of all the limitations. But if you need a small car-mountable whip that's tunable, they made a beautiful piece of antenna. But again, I wouldn't put a mobile antenna on a house, unless I was at gunpoint or something.
HK, November 2, Zulu Charlie.
It is not exactly that the frequency has, when you change the frequency, you have to retune. The tuner has a memory, and you can have thousands of those frequencies. And the antenna automatically retuned. I'm not sure that that it is automatically tuning to the frequency chosen by ham radio operator on the transceiver. That I'm not sure. But the good memory, and you can, knowing how wide is the resonance peak on that antenna, you can have a pretty nice result with SWR, which you do not have with your horizontal dipole, let's say G5RG or W3DDZ, which are kind of standard, or were kind of standard in my time for ham radio operators. Back to you.
AC2GS. John recognized. We'll get to you in a second, John. You're comparing apples with oranges, with watermelons. You know, it's kind of difficult when you do things like that. Even if it does have memories, which I don't think you're quite sure, because I don't think you know whether it has any kind of auto-tuning capability or it's just, there's a long and there's a short kind of a button to kind of just change, move the screwdriver one way or the other. But they're only resonant at one thing is resonant at a time. Just because you have 1,000 memory locations doesn't mean that I could turn on my Flex 6700 and have this antenna be able to be resonant at both 40 meters and 10 meters. It doesn't work like that. So, again, it's not the same thing. So I prefer wide Q antennas, low Q antennas that have a very wide resonance where you don't have to fiddle with an antenna tuner. And if you have to fiddle too much, you fiddle on one and you lose the other. So, again, I see nothing wrong in anyone else spending $2,000 for a glorified screwdriver antenna. I wouldn't. But let me just find out from John what he wanted to say. John?
Yeah, good evening, boy. Good evening, Matt. I was just probably 5-10 minutes late getting to the party. Wanted to put my name down for a question and wish everybody a Merry Christmas. That's not a religious thing. I don't find Christmas a religion-based thing. It's just a nice holiday. And, boy, no Christmas card this year. I'm out of the country. So, okay, I'll turn it back to you. Whenever you're available, just put me on the list.
Okay, consider yourself on the list, John, and no one's going to take it the wrong way. It you know, it's a nice thing that people tell each other, and, you know, it's polite. So, you know, don't worry about it.
Anyway, you know, some people, you got to be careful now. Yeah, like I say, it's. I just wanted to put that pre-nomer out there, but, you know, again, not a religious thing, just a nice time of year.
Okay, we understand, John. Wesley, you want to, I guess you want to continue on this.
Yeah, into XCN. What I wanted to point is that if you have a 100 feet horizontal dipole and it doesn't tune on all of the bands perfectly, it is up to your antenna tuner to tune it as good as possible, but you have no control over it. Now, with this little torsio antenna, which costs tremendous amount of money, and I wouldn't buy it. I think I wouldn't buy it. You can tune if you want to. So, if we're talking about the losses, the next subject was mesh static cable loss. Although mesh static stands about the algorithm that rules who's going to be next to relay the information, it is not the reason that I put it in your email. What I wanted to point is that if you have 100 watts or 1,000 watts, you may have losses and you still may perform, but in some applications when you have 100 milliwatts and then 3 dBs takes you off 50% of your power, and then 6 dBs, which would be twice that, and again half, you're not going to be pretty happy about it. So if we talk about the losses on coaxial cable, RG174 at 25 feet length is 7 dBs loss, RG316, 6.5, RG58, 4.1, LMR240, 19, but LMR400 is only 1 dB at 25 feet, and LMR600 is 0.63. So if somebody wants to spend good amount of money for LMR 400 and LMR 600, then they may say I don't need the little Tar Heel to tune as much as possible. I can live with the antenna that is not perfect. Did you get the point, Dr. Roy, and to ACN?
AC2GS. I don't really see the similarity. We've all kind of gone through attenuation losses of coaxial cables. It's not only a matter of the cable design and the length, but it's also the operating frequency. So, the reason that mesh is so lossy is that mesh is operating relatively, I think, on the high UHF frequency levels. And so as the frequency goes up, the attenuation loss per given length increases for any kind of constant design of a coax cable. There are thicker coax cables that have less attenuation loss. There are open lines that have negligible attenuation losses. That's why doublets, which are non-resonant, and have the corrective impedance matching circuits in your shack, in your antenna tuner, should be driven by open line so that the attenuation losses of the reflected signal back and forth is not significant, and so you can live with the losses of a doublet using open line as opposed to coaxial cable. So, sometimes you can go overboard. LMR 600 is going to give you a relatively low loss attenuation. But, if you're only operating on HF and you're not kind of running cables for 1,000 feet, it's kind of overkill. If you have a 100-foot length of cable, and you're operating on the HF bands, the amount of attenuation that you're really going to have from that is not going to warrant buying expensive versions of transmission line. And the whole point of mesh networks is that they operate very nearby, locally. You don't need 500 watts. 100 milliwatts is more than enough usually, unless it's a real obstructed topology. So that, even if you had a 3 dB loss, that would not make or break anything, because you started off with only 100 milliwatts and everything was optimum. So, now it's 50 milliwatts, so it doesn't work anymore. It's usually not the way how radio signals work. So I'm not quite sure whether you can kind of use that as an example for other situations. Occasionally in the good old days, we used to have some guy who wanted to operate UHF, 440, and his antenna, for some reason, was 200 feet away, and he decided that using an RG58 coax would be real nifty since it's inexpensive and flexible. Problem is, if you plug in the attenuation losses, a lot of loss is gotten through using something like RG58 for a 440 megahertz signal. But, most people kind of know that, hopefully, now. They use RG58 for short runs in their cars and such, and it's not that much of a problem these days. So, I don't know if we have a great lesson to teach people here.
And to AGN. I was trying to point not really about the mesh network, but the point that if you have necessary losses that you cannot avoid right now because you want to make a QSO with some DX station and your antenna is not perfect, SWR of your antenna is not perfect, then even though the deficiency of a little of turret terrestrial antenna is not so great, you still are able to minimize the losses, and in some situation you might be surprised that you can hear the station or at least transmit to the station because of the different radiation pattern much better than a not perfect dipole vacuum.
Okay. I don't want to kind of repeat myself, but, hopefully we all kind of know attenuation loss of coaxial cables, even though they're much worse than open line. They offer so many benefits to the average amateur radio operator that I would think that at least 95% of all antenna systems of amateur radio operators use coaxial cables. Fortunately, World War II kind of cranked out an almost endless supply of the stuff, so it was dirt cheap, and producing it, the price dropped a lot, and you could run 10, 20 transmission lines right next to each other. You can't do that with open line. So, I think the lesson's been learned, but, if you want to teach it again, that's fine.
No, you're right. I'm just, I came from the part of the world when everybody was saying yes, and there was a comment. Didn't do any good. So I believe the good discussion is if one person is trying to take the opposite side and at least find something that may support the conversation. If everybody says yes, there is no education. The next subject is actually related to that, what happened to New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and part of Connecticut. Let me drop it. Okay, so we had the invasion of the drones, and last week there was a question, if you find something, please share, and whatsoever. Now, I'm not trying to talk about conspiracy theory, but sometimes the value of something that was said is based on the position of the person in which he, the government or institution or the scientific material that is in scientific paper that is in the proper form at the proper time in the proper place can be respected much better. Let me drop it. Okay, so the video title was Meet the Drone Terrorizing America. Petrodynamics X-P4 Transwing. And I decided to find out if that was really the fleet of the drones from that company. So I decided to compare some pictures, and yes, from the pictures that were available online or in TV or in videos, there was some similarity to those drones, but it's not the point. The point is why we had for over a month so many drones there. So if we go to the Petrodynamic XP4, they say that it's being developed for the U.S. Navy as a recon and logistic drone capable of picking up and dropping off packages between land and moving ship, including in the high seas and high winds. Okay. And I sent to Dr. Roy two emails. One was really speculative, because one of the conspiracy theory guys said that it was about nuclear material missing. And I said that fissile material stands for the material that can be activated if bombarded with low energy neutrons, called also thermal neutrons. But gamma radiation is also very much penetrating. So all of the emitters of such stands for ionizing radiation. So we think about why we see the stars or distant small light bulb or tiny LCD of the smartphone. It is because it emits light or reflects light. So we have the UV filter, we can see UV emitter that is not in the visible light spectrum. The same is with infrared. We have a Hubble telescope and is able to see what we cannot see. So what if we want to spot missing source of ionizing radiation from the distance? That could explain the persistence in every night swarms of drones scanning the area, although we do not know it for sure. So the question was, is it passive search or is it active search marked by MUSE? If we have a source of neutrons, we can actually, if I could use the name for simplicity, activate the isotope that is emitting radiation, and that was just me, like talking to myself, but trying to share it with Dr. Roy for his comment on it. But for simplicity, alpha radiation is, let me drop it. Alpha radiation is the least penetrating. It can be stopped or absorbed by a human hand. Beta radiation can penetrate air and paper. It could be stopped by a thin sheet of aluminum. Gamma radiation is the most penetrating. Not true. The most penetrating is neutron. Even small levels can penetrate air, paper, and thin metal. Higher level can only be stopped by many centimeters of lead or many meters of concrete. And I was actually quite deep in this area. And then all of a sudden, we have something that is absolutely new. We have a testimony of the mayor of Belleville. I'm trying to get to that page. That's Belleville Mayor Michael Melham. And that was after I sent the email, and he says, yes, he was at the briefing, and there was a nuclear material that was stolen. And then Pentagon said, well, actually, it was a very, very, very small amount of medical isotope. Gosh, we have a swarms of drones. And the question is, if they could see the radiation the same way as we could see the small light in the total darkness from the cell phone from far away, right? Wouldn't they go there and try to somehow activate it, make it interact, and eventually find out if this is a missing source? But the thing is that the source is not minuscule. Back to you, Dr. Ray.
AC2GS. Well, I don't know where to go with this because this is pretty much all supposition and rumor and people who, I don't know who the hell they are. I wouldn't trust New York City's mayor to tell me about radioactive material. So I certainly wouldn't, this guy that we don't even know what little town he comes from. So this is still in the realm of who knows what the heck's going on. There are guys who have done documentaries already that this is mass hysteria. There are others that are demonstrating, you know, guys who've been playing with drones for 20 years now professionally who say that a lot of these things are just airplanes out of focus And we don't know if it's a drone. We don't know what kind of a drone. We don't know what the capability of it might have or might not have been. And to then kind of draw some weird conclusion that it's obviously a drone that's searching for radioactive material when the federal government isn't giving anyone a hint of that. Now, is it possible that everyone's lying and that's what's going on? Yeah. Is it possible that it's actually searching for unicorns? Yes. It's unlikely, but it's possible. So, I mean, you take a couple of guesses, a few rumors.